Okay, thank you for your patience. So today, I wanted to talk about a topic that actually is a little bit tough to talk about. This week, I've been really stirred as I've watched the kind of unfolding of this situation that's kind of come even more into the light at Soul Survivor with Mike Pilavachi. This week. I don't know if you've come across it. A little kind of brief synopsis of what's happened is about a year ago, there was some allegations made against Mike Pilavachi, the leader of Soul Survivor Church and the founder of the Soul Survivor event, all around kind of the way he was treating people within his church. So it was, a lot of it was about abuse of power and spiritual abuse, controlling behaviour, all this kind of stuff. And it then also kind of merged into kind of some physical stuff as well, which it kind of ended up with him, bizarrely, massaging or wrestling various kind of young male interns and workers within his church context. And, you know, this came out about a year ago, so it's been on the radar for quite a long time. But this week, two of the main people who are involved in the start of Soul Survivor decided to bring out a documentary just to be able to kind of share their story. And that those people were Matt and Beth Redman. Now, that song we've just sung was written by Matt Redman. He was one of the founders of Soul Survivor, was the worship leader, kind of in his early 20s, who kind of came up through the ranks and helped to establish that church. So he's very much in it from the beginning, but was also very closely connected to Mike Pilavachi from the start. And as I've watched this story unfold, I knew about it a year ago as the allegations came out. And as you know, we're passionate about justice here. We're passionate about making sure that people feel seen and heard and understood. About a year ago, we talked about, we interviewed Heather, who'd been on some spiritual abuse training. And we talked about the importance of making sure that church cultures are healthy cultures, not unhealthy or toxic, where people are being controlled or spiritually abused or anything like that. We looked at what does it look like to be that kind of organisation, and how can we understand what this might look like for people in order to care for them most effectively. So as this documentary came out this week, I watched it. It's about half an hour long. It's not an easy watch, but I would recommend everyone watches it. Because I do think we need to keep our eyes open to these kind of things, whether it's something that you feel like you've experienced or whether it's just that we will come across people in our lives that have been through these kind of experiences. We need to be really well equipped to understand and to be able to care for those kind of people. The documentary that they did, I found, was a really brave and vulnerable account of their own story. And I'm sure it will resonate with many, many people. They've called it Let There Be Light. And the reason they called it Let There Be Light is they're saying it's time that these kind of scenarios are brought into the light and given exposure for what they are, so that these things shouldn't be hidden and be able to carry on. And sadly, that scenario at Soul Survivor and the kind of behaviour of Mike Pilavachi as a leader of that is not an isolated incident. Many things have come to light over the last few years that have shown the depth of spiritual and emotional abuse that has taken place in many churches across the world. And there's so many situations now that we could talk about that would highlight that this is a real issue. And I suppose for me, the reason I'm passionate about this is we made a decision that when we started the living room, we wanted this to be a place of refuge, where people who had experienced maybe a difficult experience of church, or maybe they weren't cared for in the way that they needed to be cared for, they would know that they were accepted and loved for who they are here. And that's why I'm passionate about talking about this. And I suppose for me, I feel passionate about it, firstly, because this kind of leadership and behaviour needs to stop, but also because victims of this kind of abuse need to feel seen and heard and be cared for in order to be able to feel safe and heal from those kind of experiences and that kind of treatment. So what I wanted to talk about today was about the topic of silence. And specifically, when silence is harmful. When we decide to stay silent for whatever reason, how sometimes that can become harmful. And one of the topics that comes across in the documentary, but also in there's a podcast that was that came out on the same day as the documentary was released. When you listen to them talking kind of away from the cameras as such, a lot of what's talked about in that podcast especially is... I've lost my place. So you know I'm not finely polished, so just give me a moment. It says one of the topics that comes across in the documentary and the podcast is the role that silence has to play in the covering up of abusive behaviour. And there's so many times in these, in all of these scenarios that are reported across the world where leaders have kind of misused their position. It is often the common story is that someone has gone to report it and gone to tell the story and nothing was done about it. People have raised concerns and said, this isn't right. What this person has done or the way this person has been treated isn't right. So often, nothing is done about it. And that's the sad kind of trend that you see happening. And people stay silent for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes they're fearful of repercussions. They're fearful of rejection or isolation. And in a church context, sometimes people stay silent because they're not wanting to damage what God might be doing. They feel like there's a momentum in the thing that they're a part of. And if they stand up and say, no, this isn't right, what's that going to do to this ministry or whatever you want to call it that God is doing, this work that God's doing? They don't want to be the reason why that is halted or damaged. Sometimes people are scared of not being believed. They're scared of that if I come out and say what I've got to say, maybe I've not got physical evidence to show, maybe I won't be believed. Sometimes it's just that people are fearing the person or the people involved in that particular setting. And all of those kind of scenarios make people stop and not speak up when something particularly happens. And do you know what? Sometimes silence isn't just a victim being silent. Sometimes, and what they talk about in this podcast is the silence of other church leaders at the time not making a comment on a situation that is clearly wrong. That their decision to stay silent is another difficult one because it's hard to understand why they wouldn't just come out and say what needs to be said or what should be said. And it's in these kind of times that silence isn't helpful. It can actually become harmful. And when something is wrong and people are being hurt or controlled or manipulated, then silence covers up the wrongdoing. Silence can cover up things that really should be exposed and brought into the light. And as I've kind of touched on already, one of the interesting consistencies with the reporting of church scandals is the deathly silence from many church leaders. It almost feels like there's an unspoken rule within that club where it's best to keep quiet on this kind of stuff, because if we make a comment, then what might be said about us? But do you know what? When I think about being a follower of Jesus, I think about his way, his personality, and what he consistently does throughout his life. He gives us a pretty good example of how we should function. He was an expert at calling out injustice. There are so many examples through his life that we could pick out. I could come up with so many stories, tell you so many stories. I'm just going to read one because it's probably one of the most epic ones. It's in Matthew 23, verses 1 to 12, I think it is. And it says this. It's entitled in the message, it's entitled Religious Fashion Shows. We've all been there. This is what it says. Now Jesus turned to address his disciples, along with the crowd that had gathered with them. The religion scholars and Pharisees are competent teachers in God's law. You won't go wrong in following their teachings on Moses, but be careful about following them. They talk a good line, but they don't live it. They talk it into their hearts and live. They don't take it into their hearts and live it out in their behavior. It's all spit and polish veneer. Instead of giving you God's law as food and drink by which you can banquet on God, they pack it in bundles of rules, loading you down like pack animals. They seem to take pleasure in watching you stagger under these loads, and you wouldn't think of lifting a finger to help. Their lives are perpetual fashion shows, embroidered prayer shawls one day and flowery prayers the next. They love to sit at the head table at church dinners, basking in the most prominent positions, preening in the radiance of public flattery, receiving honorary degrees and getting called doctor and reverend. Don't let people do that to you. Put you on a pedestal like that. You all have a single teacher and you are all classmates. Don't set up people as experts over your life, letting them tell you what to do. Save that authority for God. Let him tell you what to do. No one else should carry the title of father. You have only one father and he's in heaven. And don't let people maneuver you into taking charge of them. There is only one life leader for you and them, Christ. Do you want to stand out? Then step down. Be a servant. If you puff yourself up, you'll get the wind knocked out of you. But if you're content to simply be yourself, your life will count for plenty. Now, what then follows after that is about 25 verses of an absolute tirade from Jesus against church leaders who posture and who say all this kind of stuff. And when I look at the person of Jesus and look at the way he works, I love it. I love his example. Because if it wasn't clear before, it's really clear now about what is important and who we should, how we should be operating, how we should be thinking and being prepared to follow his example and stand up when something isn't right. When someone is lording a position or presenting something over us that actually is causing people to feel minimised or dismissed or small or reduced as people, Jesus turns around and says, no, we don't stand for that. That is not the way this works and that's not what we're representing. And I love that because it's an example to us of this is what defying the silence actually looks like. Jesus was never afraid to stand up and defy the silence. He does it so effectively, and we can always learn from Jesus. Martin Luther King Jr. Says this, darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. He also says, hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. So as Matt and Beth Redman were brave enough and vulnerable enough to share their story and call it Let There Be Light, bringing this situation into the public domain, into the light, being honest and real about what their experiences were. Only light can drive out darkness. Only bringing things into the light. Being silent and covering it up just fights darkness with darkness. So that bravery is important in that moment. But also, as Martin Luther King Jr. Says, hate cannot drive out hate. If all we do is pour hatred on the person who's done something wrong and try and destroy them as a person, that is hate trying to drive out hate. That doesn't work either. Only love can do that. Do you know what? Sometimes love looks like holding someone to account for the things that they've done and saying to everyone, this is not okay. And even though Jesus didn't say it, Martin Luther King Jr. is a pretty good guy. So we can listen to some of those things and be inspired by that as well. But I think that's what Jesus would say as well. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. So refusing to stay silent doesn't mean we become hateful or aggressive. If love is the goal, then breaking the silence might be difficult for some people to hear. But we stand in solidarity and love with those who may have been harmed by the kind of behaviour that we're challenging. So love looks like noticing and acknowledging that something is or was in the past wrong. It's not about being a troll or a nuisance, but being considered and consistent about what you stand for. And being prepared to say, I'm not going to just add to the silence on this. I'm going to be prepared to stand up and say, no, that is bang out of order. and look for the people who are hurting in those situations. This isn't just a church, this isn't just exclusive to a church context. I can think about scenarios where I've seen the collateral damage from other people's behaviour, where I've watched people suffer in silence and feel like they are invisible. And it's in those kind of times you look at it and go, who are we going to be? Who are we going to be in those times? Are we going to be the people who will just add to the silence because, you know what, it's a bit awkward and I haven't got the full picture? Or are you going to look for the victims, the isolated, the rejected in those times and go, I see you and we love you and we care for you? Because that's what I think being a follower of Jesus and someone who is pursuing being a person of love actually looks like. So silence for me leads to distance, to isolation, to rejection, sometimes to disillusionment, to the concealing of things, to the forgetting of things, or the dismissing of things. Prolonged silence means people forget what went on. And I find this especially in church contexts. If we just keep the silence, then it's almost like we forget the details and we forget what potentially was traumatic for some people. And that happens all because it never got clearly brought into the light. So why is this important for us? Well, the question for me when I think about us as a group of people and those who can't be here today is, who do we want to be known as people? And how do we want to be seen collectively? What do we want to be known as? And I want to be known, I want for us to be known as people who will stand up, who will say the difficult thing when it needs to be said, who will notice the victims in scenarios. I want to feel that with each and every one of us and for us as a community, that we could be known as people of integrity and justice and love and care. And I think putting this stuff into action is beginning to be what that looks like. Do you know, breaking the silence can be challenging. It's not just in times of injustice that it's relevant. Sometimes it's just in people's lives. What if someone has decided to get divorced? That's often met with silence because people don't really know what to say or how to respond. I haven't got the full picture, so I don't know what side to get on. So I'll tell you what, I'll just stay silent. No. Isolation, rejection. What if someone has admitted to struggles with addiction? It's beyond our skill set to know how to deal with that. So what do we do? Do we stay silent or do we acknowledge that even in our lack of understanding of the situation, that we see them and we care for them? What about if someone is experiencing depression? We haven't got the skills or the tools to fix them ourselves, but have we got the ability to just stand in the gap and sometimes in silence, in a good way, and not try and give them Bible verses and kind of quote everything that we think they might need to hear in order to feel better? That's the reality for some people. What about someone who's having a relationship crisis and they don't know whether they want to stay in their relationship? How are we going to respond to that? Maybe someone is grieving and doesn't know whether they believe the things that they used to believe because their world has fallen apart. How are we going to operate in that? Are we going to just stay silent or are we going to be prepared to stand in that gap? Maybe someone has made a mistake, a dreadful mistake. Easiest thing is to isolate that person and say, oh, we don't have anything to do with them because that's what they did. Or are we going to go, do you know what? They might be a good person, but they've made a mistake. And how are we going to care for them and look after them? What about if someone has decided to be open about their sexuality or their gender identity and has had this kind of massive moment of bravery where they've decided to decide this is who I am and this is who I want to be and I want you to know me as that? How often are we silent because we go, I don't really know. Oh, I've never met anyone who's changed their gender or I don't know anyone who's come out as gay. How are we going to respond in that situation? Because I tell you what they need love and care and support. Maybe someone has, I've done all my maybe someone's. I just got caught on the wrong line. I'm sure there's other things, fill in the gaps. But you know, in all of these situations, people can end up feeling vulnerable in all of these times. And our decision, when we think about silence and what we're going to do with that, is it's about making a decision to say, are we going to leave someone vulnerable and isolated? Or are we going to be the kind of people who pursue connection to bring love and care and support to that table? Because I think, if I'm really honest, I actually think being a follower of God and a follower of Jesus is really simple. I think it's just about loving people. And if we can begin to put that into action, then that's the core of what we were asked to do. And if we all just did it, then maybe there would be a kind of revolution of love happening in all of our scenarios. Even just the number of people in this room, if we all activated that, people would begin to feel different. It's not about trying to make converts. It's just about trying to love people and take them where they're at. So if we can sharpen ourselves to keep standing up, even if others are silent, then we are taking steps to put that love into action. So for me, this is this issue happens in a multitude of ways. It's not just about church leaders staying silent when something has happened and really everyone should say and do the right thing. It's not just about that, although in this situation that I talked about earlier, that's clear that there is a deathly silence around this. People not being prepared to put their neck on the line and say, this is wrong and I'm prepared to stand for that. It's not just about that. Sometimes it's about victims staying silent and not feeling able to do that. Let's read the signs and look for situations where we can help people. But also, as all of those things I've just mentioned, being aware of what's happening in other people's lives and being prepared to be people who defy the silence and step in and help when someone might be suffering. Going to finish with a collection of Martin Luther King Jr. quotes, all on silence, that I think are really important for us to ponder and digest over this week. And this is what they say. There comes a time when silence is betrayal. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter. In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. It's that one that gets me. Because isn't it funny, in the moment of trauma, the moment of disappointment, the moment of letdown, the words of the enemy, our enemy in that situation, the person who caused us harm, are often the loudest words, but they're not necessarily the words that remain. They can remain and they can remain damaging and painful. But do you know what? When silence plays a role in that, it's the silence of our friends, the people around us, that really begins to cause us the most trauma over time. And do you know what? We have an opportunity to work against that. And if I think about who we want to be, surely that's the kind of thing we want to do and how we want to behave. So, sorry it was a bit of a strange subject today, but it's weighed heavy on me this week as I watched this thing. And I don't want to ignore this stuff, and I'm not going to sit by and just say, it's okay. And that's it's hard sometimes to do it, but who do I want to be known as? Let's be those kind of people. So let's stand up and make a noise when needed. Okay, let's pray. Father God, thank you for today. Thank you for just the opportunity to spend this time together. And I pray as each of us go away and hopefully try and ponder the stuff that we've talked about, I pray we'd see opportunities and moments in our own situations where maybe we could begin to defy the silence for other people and step in for other people. But also in those times where we can see that something's wrong, give us bravery to be able to say, just so you know, I don't think this is okay. God, if there's people that we can think of in our lives that we go, man, they must have been really hurt in that situation, God, I pray you'd help us to be brave and step out and say, do you know what? I might not have seen it at the time, but I want you to know now I see you. And God, I just pray that you would help us be, I suppose, activators in helping people to heal and feel loved and cared for as we kind of try and put this stuff into action. So just be with us and guide us in all of these things. Amen.